Welcome, welcome, welcome. I would like to welcome you to episode 413 of the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. And here at the Unpopular Podcast, I'm not really asking you to agree with me, I'm asking you to hear me out. The problem that I have with criticism is, to me, there's two types of criticism. There's biased criticism and unbiased criticism. I think that criticism is important. So when I say I don't like criticism, that's I'm not minimizing the importance of criticism. I'm not minimizing the importance of the thought that criticism is a good launching point to change and to growth. I wholeheartedly believe that. I think that if you're willing to accept praise and adoration, I think that you should be willing to accept criticism. In that sense, I love criticism because criticism helps growth. But when I said, and the reason why I say that I don't like criticism, I'm talking solely about biased criticism. I think that some people have a thought in their mind that criticism equals hate, or you're only criticizing me because you're jealous, so you're only criticizing me because you want what I have. Now, I'm not going to lie and say that there are probably people out there that do have that type of approach for criticism. But that's not where I'm coming from. When we're talking about sports, the best way to critique somebody, the best way that you can see where somebody is looking at their track record, looking at what they do, looking at what they've done. I don't know John Calipari from A Can of Paint. He's never met me. I've never met him. And I am not saying that he isn't a good coach. To be able to coach as long as he's coached at the different places that he's coached, and when you see the impact that he's had on these places, whether that's Memphis, whether that's Kentucky, it would be foolish to criticize him and say that he's not a good coach. Because that would be unequivocally wrong. But let's understand that there are expectations for different positions, different people, different coaches. I expect much more from a Coach K or a Roy Williams than I do a coach at a lower tier school. You have more resources. You're able to recruit better. You're able to get better players. So the expectation is much higher for those type of coaches. John Calipari is in that class. In fact, John Calipari is in a slightly different class, and I'm going to explain. Going into March Madness, there was a lot of talk about John Calipari and how, lack of a better term, comfortable his spot should be as Kentucky's head coach. You see, John Calipari, I think, is one of the best recruiters in college sports right now. His track record of recruiting is undefeated and honestly unmatched. from the amount of people that he has brought to his schools, whether that is, again, Memphis or Kentucky, the amount of people that eventually see themselves go to the NBA is staggering. In that sense, I can't take anything away from John Calipari. So the question is, Jalen, why are people questioning his relevancy, his stature as the Kentucky basketball head coach going into the March Madness tournament? It's because when you have, how do I explain this in a better way, in a different way than what people have already said? If I give you a box of crayons and I give somebody else a box of crayons, and the box of crayons I give you is 150 crayons in that box, and a box that I give somebody else has, let's say, 30 or 40 crayons, I expect the person with 150 crayons to color a more beautiful, a more elaborate piece than the one that has 30, 40 crayons. You have more to work with, so I expect you to do more with what you have. That's in life. If you have more advantages than somebody else, I expect those advantages to help you get further in life. Well, I don't think that there's been anybody in the history of college basketball as a coach that has had more advantages as far as recruiting, as far as players, than John Calipari. In fact, I don't want to do this, but I think I have to. Now, again, this isn't me hating. This isn't me being unbiased. Or I'm sorry, this isn't me being biased. This is me being as unbiased as I can. We talk about crayons and we talk about having advantages. Let me first paint this picture for you. College basketball is not the NBA. That's obvious. College basketball is not NBA. And depending on where you go, depending on what school you go to, depending on what your record looks like, it's very rare that you're going to see an abundance of NBA players during a season. There's not that many NBA players in college basketball. It is extremely difficult to go from the NBA, or I'm sorry, to go from college to the NBA. There's not that many slots, and your talent level has to be on another level. To see 4 or 5 NBA players in a regular season for a team is rare, to say the least. There's not that many NBA players walking around college. I'll just be real with you. So, to have an NBA player on your team is special. And to have an NBA player on your team in college, like to have a player that they know, that they can see, yo, that is NBA talent. To have that is special. You have to be a good recruit to get those type of players. So I said I didn't want to do this, but I have to. I have to emphasize my point exactly. I'm not going to go to Memphis. I'm not going to talk about Derrick Rose. I'm not going to talk about Tyreke Evans. I'm not going to talk about Dejon Wagner. I'm not going to talk about Chris Douglas Roberts. What I'm going to do is I'm going to strictly stick with Kentucky. And one of the reasons why I didn't want to do this, because it is a long list, but I have to do this. I am going to name you every single player that was drafted that played under John Calipari. Now, when I hear this list, and I've seen people do this, and I see people criticize, well, they didn't do anything in the NBA. Again, that has no bearing on the fact that they're a player in college that was good enough to get drafted. We're not talking about their NBA skill. We're talking about their college skill. To be drafted from college to the NBA, you have to have skill above the rest. Here is a list of players that John Calipari, just in Kentucky, that he has coached. John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Patrick Peterson, Eric Bledsoe, Daniel Orton, Enes Freedom, now I guess his name is, Brandon Knight, Josh Harlinson, DeAndre Liggins, Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Terrence Jones, Marcus Teague, Deron Lamb, Darius Miller, Nerlens Noel, Archie Goodwin, Julius Randle, James Young, Karl Anthony Towns, Willie Carly Stein, Trey Lyles, Devin Booker, the Harrison Twins, Dakari Johnson, Jamal Murray, Skyle Labissiere, Tyler Ulis, De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk, Bam Adebayo, Kevin Knox, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jared Vanderbilt, Hibalo Diallo, PJ Washington, Tyler Uro, Keldon Johnson, Tyrese Maxey, Emmanuel Quickley, Nick Richards, Isaiah Jackson, Brandon Boston Jr., Shaedon Sharpe, Ty Washington, Carson Wallace, and Chris Livingston. That's just Kentucky. Again, take out Derrick Rose. That was in Memphis. Take out Tyreke Evans. That was at Memphis. Take out Chris Douglas Roberts. That was in Memphis. Take out Dejon Wagner. That was in Memphis. The reason why John Calipari's name right now is being questioned as why his job is so secure is because you've had this much talent. Again, I'm not talking about what they did in past college. I'm talking about what they did in college. You've had this abundance of talent. Yet and still, you only have one national championship, and that was with Anthony Davis. You've had number one overall picks in John Wall. You've had incredible players like Devin Booker, who came off the bench in college. You had Jamal Murray. You've had so many players, yet and still you only have one. And that's even if you include Memphis, you only have one championship. You see, at some point, resumes have to matter. Again, I'm not criticizing, I'm not talking about John Calipari as a personal person, because I don't know him personally. I'm talking about what you have put on paper. And what you have put on paper is one of the greatest collections of talent that has ever been coached. Yet and still, you only have one national championship. Now, again, some of these players obviously didn't pan out in the NBA. Some of them had incredible careers, i.e. Jamal Murray, Devin Booker, Anthony Davis, John Wall. But so you look at those players, right? Like, if you want, because I know some people having a tough time separating NBA from college. Cool. If you want to look at John Wall, 2, 4, 5-time All-Star. If you want to look at DeMarcus Cousins, 4-time All-Star. If you want to look at Anthony Davis, NBA champion. If you want to look at Julius Randle, most improved player, 3-time All-Star. If you want to look at Karl Anthony Towns, rookie of the year, 4-time All-Star. If you want to look at Devin Booker, 4-time All-Star. He's also been to an NBA Finals. If you want to look at Jamal Murray, NBA champion. If you want to look at De'Aaron Fox, all-star. If you want to look at Malik Monk, probably going to win sixth man of the year this year. If you want to look at Bam Adebayo, three-time all-star. If you want to look at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, two-time all-star, front runner for the MVP right now. If you want to look at PJ Washington, an important piece for the Dallas Mavericks right now. If you want to look at Tyler Herro, sixth man of the year. Tyrese Maxey, all-star, one of the best point guards in the East. If you want to look at Keldon Johnson, a very important piece for the Spurs. These are players. This is their NBA resume. What do you think they were doing in college? Playing under John Calipari. Yet and still, he only has one championship. Again, resumes got to matter sometime. And I'm not one to call for somebody's job that doesn't deserve their job to be lost. But when you have that collection of talent and have one championship to show for it, there is an issue. There is a disconnect somewhere. Because again, it is incredibly difficult to recruit an NBA style player for your college team. He's had a bevy of them. He's had so many, it's hard to count. He's had more, I think he's had 47 players get drafted from Kentucky, just Kentucky. And 35 of them are first round picks, I believe. My question is, when do resumes matter? When? Because as a recruiter, A1. As a recruiter, one of the best to ever do it. To get this much talent at one place. As a recruiter, the amount of money that John Calipari has produced for Kentucky is astronomical. But as a coach, what do you have to show for your coaching acumen outside of one championship? Which honestly, don't get me wrong, I understand that championships are great and that's what you play for. And not everyone's able to get one. But there's almost a sense of that championship looks worse and worse when we talk about John Calipari. Because while yes, you did it, you should have much more. We look at John Calipari as a obviously all-time great coach. Honestly, it's not because of the wins and losses, it's because of who you've coached. Which then the conversation expands to, well, he's coached that much or that much talent. How has he not been able to get the most out of them? Now, on a personal level, obviously, he's changed a bunch of people's lives. He got a bunch of people to the NBA. But we're talking about the college realm. And this all stems from Kentucky, again, underachieving and losing early. And they were the number two seed and lost to Oakland. A much, much smaller school. Doesn't have as many NBA players. Doesn't have as many recruit options. Doesn't have as much money to operate with. This is coming off of last year losing to St. Peter's. In these conversations, when we talk about criticism, there's a lot of people that would say I'm wrong or would say that people are wrong for questioning the quote-unquote great John Calipari. Again, I'm not questioning his personality. I'm not questioning his personal being because I don't know him. I think it would be extremely disingenuous to comment on something that I don't know about. And honestly, isn't really my business to talk about because I don't know him in that space. But what I can critique or question is, how do you have this much talent and you have so little to, you've done so little with it? In a space where this much talent would put anybody else over the top. Again, I don't think you understand how rare it is to get an NBA player on your team. If we look this year, look at UConn. The best team in college basketball by a long shot, in my opinion. They have one, maybe two NBA players. My team, North Carolina, they have maybe one, Armando Bacot, and RJ Davis just won ACC Player of the Year. I don't think he's making it to the NBA. I think we have to really question why John Calipari's, or let me say it like this. I think we should start having the conversation and having a thorough conversation as to how we should really view John Calipari as a coach. Because as a recruiter, probably the greatest to ever live in college basketball. But as a coach, for some reason, you have all this talent and you haven't been able to maximize in college. And now you look in yet another year that his team is one of the top seeded teams in college basketball in March. Again, I think they were ranked second in their region. And you lose to a 15 seed in Oakland. A team that does not have an NBA player on the roster. When you, John Calipari, for yet another year, have multiple. I don't know. Let's move forward. Since we're in this college, you know, we're in March Madness. We're deep in March Madness. There has been some incredible games in the first round. We just talked about Oakland beating Kansas. Oh, no, Kentucky, I'm sorry. Kansas almost lost to Samford. It's been an Oregon destroyed South Carolina. It's been a really good first round. On the women's side, I think UNC beat Michigan State, which is cool because North Carolina is going to play Michigan State in the second round today. It's so we're in the thick of March Madness, and I didn't want to. I wanted to do something fun. I wanted to do something, you know, just lighthearted, and I wanted to talk about some of my favorite college basketball players to watch. Now, that doesn't mean these are the best. I think the greatest college basketball player is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was Luau Cinder when he was in college. There's a small list of players that can even top what he's done in college. That's, you know, Kareem, Bill Russell is definitely up there. Bill Walton is probably up there. And a lot of people would probably say Bill Walton's the greatest. Maybe even Oscar Robertson. Look, I'm not debating on who the greatest is. what I wanted to do was just talk about players that I loved watching. The only caveat is I wanted to pick players that's not my favorite team. Obviously, I've talked about this ad nauseum, obviously, in the last few episodes, seeing as though we're in March Madness, but North Carolina is my favorite team. I can have a long laundry list of players from North Carolina that I liked, whether that's Ty Lawson, whether that's Tyler Hansbrough, whether that's Theo Pinson, whether that's Vince Carter, whether that's Rashad McCant. I can go Antoine Jameson. I can go all day. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to talk about some players outside of my favorite school that I like watching. Now, I think one of the beauties about college basketball that's different from the NBA is you get to see in real time quickly the maturation of a player. Now, there are times when players are just head and shoulders above the rest. A good example, in my opinion, is when Anthony Davis was in college. Anthony Davis, you can just look and tell that he was head and shoulders better than everyone. Like his defensive ability, at that time he wasn't the best offensive player, but he can get to the rim. Anthony Davis was just better than everyone. That's just how it was. And while those instances are rare, they happen. A lot of times you see a player that is young, doesn't really know how to play the game of basketball, because there's a difference between being athletic and being just God-gifted at something and knowing how to do something. To learn how to be a basketball player in a 30, 35 game stint is always interesting to me. So I love watching, obviously basketball is my favorite sport. I love watching college basketball because you see a raw, rare instance of someone trying to learn how to play a game that you love. So now, obviously, most of these players were kind of like in those Anthony Davis class as far as they were just better than the rest, but they were extremely fun to watch. I'll give you one. I'm going to give five of them, but and there's no order. I'm going to talk about them in this way. The first person I want to talk about is John Wall. John Wall was a different type of watch. You see, there's a reason why people say that even in a small frame when he was healthy, that Derrick Rose is the most athletically dominant point guard the NBA has ever seen. I kind of feel the same way, in a sense, about John Wall in college. Playing for Kentucky, playing on a team that had DeMarcus Cousins, that had Eric Bledsoe, that had Daniel Orton, it is hard to stand out. But it was very clear, very early, that, oh, John Wall is the best player on this team. John Wall will go down as probably having the greatest high school hoops mixtape we've ever seen. He's in a very small class. Austin Rivers is in that. Their hoop mixtapes are legendary. But it's very rare, and a lot of people don't talk about this, it's very rare that your hoop mixtapes translates to the other, to a higher level. You see a lot of people that have incredible hoop mixtapes that don't really do much in college because, again, the talent level from high school or AAU to college is drastic, is different. Just like the talent between college and NBA is drastic, it's different. And I say all that to say John Wall's game translated beautifully in college. The only issue, obviously, John Wall had is he couldn't really shoot that well. But when you talk about speed, when you talk about his ability to get to the rim almost effortlessly, when you talk about his ability to get the best out of his teammates like a DeMarcus Cousins, like an Eric Bledsoe, it was John Wall was so fun to watch. That was, if you want to harken back to the first topic that we talked about, that's one of the biggest reasons. Like that, if we talk about all of John Calipari's teams and all of the players that he has coached, that's probably the most shocking result that out of everyone he's coached. I understand that he, you know, you had Karl Anthony Towns, you had Devin Booker on the same team, and Jamal Murray. But when that Kentucky team that had John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins didn't make it to the national championship, that was probably one of the biggest shocks as a fan watching a Calipari team not make it. I loved watching John Wall. John Wall, now obviously there could be a little bit of biasness seeing that he was drafted to the Wizards, but just watching him in college was fun. Watching him in college, and he was by far the best point guard in college at his time. And it was a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. And the way that it's always interesting to see how somebody approaches the game. Like there are players that are dominant in the paint, but aren't really great shooters. There are people that are great shooters that aren't, you know, it's the beauty is you're able to, you can affect the game the way that you're able to affect it. And John Wall, with his speed, with his ability to get to the rim, with his dunking ability, with his athleticism, he was a different type of player. So John Wall was a player that I just loved to watch. Another player I love watching, and this is probably more recent than the other people on this list, is Steph Curry. Yes, Steph Curry is my current favorite player. And we're going to talk about the conversation that has been surrounding Steph Curry a little bit later in the show. But what was interesting about watching Steph Curry in college is players are sometimes put in molds. Players are sometimes put in categories that they may or may not belong in, whether it's because of their size, whether it's because of their shape, whether it's because of their attributes or things that they don't have. Like, I'm sure if you're a 7-footer, more than likely you're going to be viewed as a center or a big man because you're 7 feet tall. And there's no one in this world that is quite like a Victor Wembanyama, so you're not going to be viewed as, oh, Victor. No. Steph Curry had no signs of NBA, of a future in the NBA because of the mold that he was probably, that was tried to put on him. Whether you're talking about he was undersized in college and in high school, he had really no recruits, which is why he went to Davidson. Even though he was the son of Del Curry, it just didn't look like Steph Curry was going to amount to really anything in the NBA, if he was even going to the NBA. Because again, there's a mold that you, at least at that time, that you need to look like going to the NBA, and it definitely did not look like that for Steph. On top of that, you go to a small school in Davis, and it's like there's not much expectation for you. And the fact that Steph Curry not only carved a name for himself, but carved a name for Davidson in college, making one of the most magical Final Four runs or tournament runs we've ever seen, is why he was so fun to watch. Now the thing about Steph is I didn't really watch him until tournament play. Because, I mean, I'm not from North Carolina. I'm not getting Davidson games like that. Like, so Steph will obviously go down as one of the... Let me backtrack. Steph will go down as the greatest shooter of all time. He is currently the greatest shooter of all time. And obviously you didn't see that in college, but you can definitely see a glimpse. And Steph Curry was just different to watch. Now, again, I didn't really see him until, you know, tournament play and March Madness. But even in that stretch, it was, he was different. And you really saw, now obviously you don't know when you're in the moment, but you saw where the game was going early on because of him. Again, we're going to have a conversation about Steph a little later in the show, but Steph Curry was one of my favorite players to watch. I have to talk about two players in a row because they were simultaneously dominating college basketball. And one person obviously gets more love than the other, but what their imprint was to college basketball will almost never be touched. Now, again, I'm not saying that these are the greatest best college basketball players ever. These are just players that I enjoyed. At Ohio State, Greg Oden was clearly the best college basketball player at his time. And we were still talking about an era where it was still uniform, it was still popular to build an NBA team around a big man. While because of the way the game is played now, that isn't necessarily the greatest decision, that was still that was still viewed as normal in, you know, back when Greg Oden was dominating at Ohio State. Now, Greg Oden is not the person that I'm talking about, but to put into context, Greg Oden was probably viewed as the best player in college basketball at that time, and rightfully so, whether we talk about how he was able to dominate in the paint, whether we talk about his defense and his rim protection. There wasn't many if it wasn't for injury, Greg Oden would have it. Greg Oden, I'm sorry, would have an incredible, incredible NBA career. He was a tad bit ahead of his time. It was just injuries got the best of him. Why am I talking about Greg Oden? Because Greg Oden went number one in that draft. But to me, if you want to look at how the game is played today and you look at the landscape of that college season, there was nobody better than Kevin Durant and Michael Beasley. Kevin Durant at Texas, Michael Beasley at Kansas State. Again, I am not crapping on Greg Oden. I'm not saying Greg Oden did not deserve to be the number one overall pick. What I'm saying is if you can obviously go back and you see what Kevin Durant has done to the league and you see just how the league is forming and how the league turned out to be now, Kevin Durant and Michael Beasley were easily should have been the number one and two pick. Yet I think the greatest Texas player, at least basketball player, we have ever seen is Kevin Durant. Obviously, with age and maturation, the Kevin Durant we see today and the Kevin Durant we saw at his peak was not the Kevin Durant that we saw in Texas, but the way that he dominated the game was Kevin Durant was still dominating this. The way that he's dominating in the NBA, he was doing in college, just on a college level. Being taller than everyone, being able to shoot over everyone, having the handles. I don't think, at least to this day, I don't think we've seen a player quite like Kevin Durant ever. So imagine how he was doing that in college. Now, no, Michael Beasley isn't as tall as Kevin Durant, but Michael Beasley was doing a lot of this, of similar things that Kevin Durant was doing in college. He was just a stronger, bigger, in a sense, body that was getting to the rim, that was putting up shots. He was a certified bucket. He still is, but he was a certified bucket. Both of them were. And watching them dominate college, both of them, was just – was, man. Like, I remember watching Michael Beasley put up 40 on ESPN. And I was like, that was probably one of the most effortless 40s I've ever seen. And then watching Kevin Durant put up 35, 40 points, and his jersey was way too big for his body. That's just how it was. When we talk about, yes, again, this is not a conversation of who is the greatest college basketball player of all time. I'm not going to do that. What this is a conversation of is who have I myself enjoyed watching more? And I don't think there's really any, there's a sense of joy that I got watching Kevin Durant and Michael Beasley dominate to the point where even to this day, it's hard for me to understand, at least from a talent perspective, why someone like Michael Beasley isn't in the league. Because Michael Beasley was dominating in the league. It was just a lot of personal stuff. But in college, K-State, Michael Beasley put them on the map. I don't know the long lineage of K-State basketball players, but I do know that Michael Beasley should be number one. And people can talk as much as they want about Mike Beasley and his personal life or whatever and how, you know, he conducted himself on and off the court. But what I will say is he was a bucket. And he was one of the greatest college basketball players we have ever seen. The issue with him and the issue kind of with Kevin Durant was they were playing alongside Greg Oden, who at the time fit the mold for how you would build an NBA team. Because trust and believe, if Greg Oden was not there, I think that Kevin Durant and Michael Beasley would easily be considered at least number 1A and 1B greatest players to be playing in college basketball. And they were a sight to see, both of them. One at Texas, one at Kansas State. And the last player that I want to talk about is someone that finds themselves in rare air. We talked about Anthony Davis a couple times this episode already. One of the very interesting things and one of the very rare things in college basketball is a freshman to come in and dominate. And a freshman to come in and be leaps and bounds better than everyone. We've seen that on a couple occasions. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's rare. Like when Zion Williamson came in, he was by far the best player in college basketball. While they didn't win, he was the best player. Same thing as Anthony Davis at Kentucky. They won a national championship that year. I would probably say the same as John Wall when he was in Kentucky being a freshman. It's rare that you get freshmen that are the best player. I mean, even on the list I talked about, Steph Curry was not that. But Kevin Durant arguably could have been if you take Greg Oden out. It's rare. Not only is it rare to be a freshman and dominate college basketball, it's rare to be a freshman and dominate in college basketball and ultimately lead your team as a freshman to a national championship and ultimately win. That is exactly what Carmelo Anthony did. People talk a lot about Carmelo Anthony, and I think it's very interesting when you hear the conversations that are sparked when his name comes up and where his name should fall in NBA ranks or in college basketball ranks. But what I will say is Carmelo Anthony is by far one of the greatest college basketball players of all time. And what he did at Syracuse, mind you, Syracuse wasn't known to be a powerhouse and actually still isn't known to be a powerhouse college. When you're in the ACC and you have Duke in the ACC, you have North Carolina in the ACC, There's no one that's looking at Syracuse and thinking, that's the school. The reason why Syracuse is what they is as far as a basketball school today is because of Carmelo Anthony. Again, it is rare for freshmen to dominate the game of basketball in college. It's even more rare for a freshman to dominate the game of basketball in college and lead their team to a national championship and ultimately win. Carmelo Anthony will go down as one of the greatest scorers, in my opinion, in NBA history and one of the greatest scorers in college basketball history. He had one of the most prettiest uniformal jump shots we have ever seen. And again, I don't know where you place him in the history of the game, and I'm not here to argue with you. But I am here to say that Carmelo Anthony is probably one of the most influential players we've ever seen, which kind of goes into our next conversation. And he is one of the greatest scorers of our generation. And it was a pleasure watching him dominate. Even as a North Carolina fan, it was a pleasure watching him dominate in college. Because at that time, with the age that I was, I really never saw a player come in from Baltimore and just wreak havoc on college basketball. He was leaps and bounds the best player in college basketball. It wasn't even close. Like, you know how you can have an argument between Kevin Durant, Michael Beasley, Greg Oden? Steph Curry probably wasn't the best basketball player in college at his time. I know Kimball was in the league there. I mean, it was in college as well. There's people that have the argument that John Wall might not have been the best player on his team. And you look at DeMarcus Cousins, even though I think those conversations are blasphemous, there was no debate who the best player in college basketball was when Carmelo Anthony was in Syracuse. There just wasn't. Who are some of your favorite players? You know, I know there's been some incredible players I didn't name. Again, I know we talked about Kimba a little bit. Jimmer Fredette was exciting to watch. Just who were your favorite players that I didn't name? You know, or who were your favorite players to watch? So leave in the comments. Let me know. We'll talk about it. I talked about Carmelo Anthony being influential. And a conversation, which is actually going to go into our topic after this, LeBron James and J.J. Redick started their own podcast. And LeBron James came out and said that Steph Curry and Allen Iverson are the most influential players in NBA history. And that obviously caused an uproar on social media, that caused an uproar with other media outlets. And I wanted to give my perspective on the situation and my perspective on that take. What I think people get confused is they hear influential and they automatically think best. They hear the most influential and they automatically put whoever's being discussed as greatest player of all time. And I think that you have to be able to differentiate the two. Because most influential does not mean greatest of all time. And I also think people don't really understand what influential means. Influential does not mean, he was the greatest basketball player of all time, so he's automatically influential. No. Or he played better than him, so he's more influential. No. When this conversation has had, a couple names that I hear a lot is obviously Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant. And while they were great, I'm not taking away from anything that they did. But I just don't know. I'll say this. I agree with LeBron James. I think that the two most influential players in NBA history is Allen Iverson and Steph Curry. I think Michael Jordan was influential. I think Kobe Bryant was influential. I think LeBron James is influential. But I think the two most influential players we've ever seen is Steph Curry and Allen Iverson. That does not mean that Steph Curry and Allen Iverson are the greatest players ever. Allen Iverson is my favorite player of all time. And that kind of goes, that kind of is why I kind of have the stance that I have. This is a biased conversation, because to be influential, you have to have a bit of biasness in it. Because to be influential in one space, you have to be influential to yourself, or they have to be influential to you. When we look at the game and how the game is played and how the game is viewed, you see a bunch of Allen Iverson and you see a bunch of Steph Curry. I think Steph Curry, you have an argument, I'm not saying he is, but you have an argument that Steph Curry is the most influential because his game is trickling down outside of the NBA. The way basketball is played to this day is because of how Steph Curry has revolutionized the three-point shot. When you see NBA teams, when you see the importance of the quote unquote 3-and-D, or the Houston Rockets, either you're shooting a three or you're taking a layup, or college basketball and how many threes they take, or the lack of importance of a big man that can't shoot the ball anymore, or they can't do what Nikola Jokic or Joel Embiid does. Or you see AAU in high school games where all they do is put up threes. That is because of Steph Curry. That is influence. You see Steph Curry's influence clear as day. Allen Iverson style. You hear a lot of players say that they wore headbands because of Allen Iverson. They wore arm sleeve because of Allen Iverson. Before Allen Iverson, David Stern was not, it was a strict dress code. He scoffed at that. A lot of people have tattoos because of Allen. I have an Allen Iverson tattoo. While yes, Kobe was better than probably both of them. Michael Jordan obviously was better than both of them. LeBron James obviously better, but when we talk about most influential, that doesn't take away from what those three, Jordan, Kobe, LeBron, that doesn't take away from their impact and just how great they were in their place in NBA history. But when we talk about impact, they don't have the same impact that Steph and Allen Iverson has. And I think when people hear me or LeBron or anyone say that someone like Steph Curry is the most influential player or Allen Iverson, I think they have to understand that I'm not saying that, Steph is better than Jordan. I understand Jordan's impact on the game and Jordan's impact in life, whether we talk about fashion and sneakers and Nike. I get that. And I understand that Jordan obviously is up there in impact as well. But another thing that I think gets lost in this is impact is different for different people. Like in this instance, at least for Steph has players thinking and has kids thinking that they can do exactly what Steph does. Nobody is like LeBron James, and nobody thinks that they're going to be like LeBron James. But people think that they can put up shot after shot after shot like Steph. That's influential. People can try and dress and look like Allen Iverson, whether we talk about the cornrows. He made cornrows popular in sports. I'm not saying he was the first. I'm saying he made them popular. LeBron James isn't doing that, and I'm not negating anything that he's done. But when we talk about influential, I don't know if I can put LeBron James or Kobe, and rest in peace to Kobe Bryant, but he's not as influential. Maybe he, you know, he's more people's favorite player. I get that. And there's a lot of people that think Kobe's the greatest player of all time. I'm not here arguing with you. But again, there's a difference between greatest of all time and best player and most influential. And I think that you can see Steph's impact, Allen Iverson's impact, more than you can see a LeBron or Jordan or Kobe. So I think he's the most, you know, I think Steph Curry and Allen Iverson are the most influential players ever. I agree with LeBron. And speaking of that, lastly before we go, I was asked a question that I kind of wanted to bring on the pod and talk about. We're in a new age of entertainment. We're in a new age of connectivity. We're in a new age of voice. People's voices now are stronger or more important than they've ever been. And people have more of a people have the ability to have their own platforms. And there are a lot of people now more than ever that are taking advantage and using their platforms to enhance whatever they want to enhance. And for the last few years now, we've seen an influx of players having podcasts, whether that's Paul George, whether that's Gilbert Arenas, whether that's Pat Beverly, whether that's Draymond Green, whether that's DeMar DeRozan has something now, whether that's now LeBron James and J.J. Redick, and J.J. Redick has a podcast, another podcast, whether that's Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles, whether that's Steven Jackson or Matt Barnes. And it's not just basketball. What's his name? Cam Newton has one that's very successful. Shannon Sharp. Players now have such a unique way of expressing themselves and have such a strong platform that a lot of these players need the outlet of a podcast. I'll say this. Obviously, being a sports podcast, obviously being a smaller sports podcast, I understand that there's a ceiling, a lower ceiling for me than there is for somebody else. I understand because I've never played in the NBA, because I've never played in the NFL, that there's going to be a sector of people that don't give two craps about what I got to say because they don't think it's valid. I'm not valid enough to discuss something. They think that my opinion is not as important because I haven't, quote unquote, been in the trenches, even though I've played college basketball. But seeing as though that what is the highest I've gotten, people think, all right, what he has to say doesn't matter. So I understand that going into a space that is dominated, especially now more than ever, by former athletes, there's always going to be a lower ceiling for me. That doesn't mean I can't succeed, and people that want to be or have a sports podcast can't succeed. It just means that there's always going to be a sector of people that are not going to take your words or not going to take your opinion seriously because you haven't done as much as a former player. But I do think that it is important, and I think that it's great that players are taking their platforms and using it to their benefit. For the longest, reporters and analysts and other people were the only mouthpieces to these athletes. And now that we're in an age where these players are so close to us because of social media, that a lot of people feel a kinship, a lot of people feel like they're connected to them, it's good that they can use their platform. I think it's great. There's not an ounce of jealousy in me. I think it's pretty cool that, you know, these podcasters or these athletes, I'm sorry, are starting podcasts. I think if there's something that I don't like, I don't want people to think that this is easy. I don't want people to see a bunch of athletes and a bunch of people that may or may not have audio or podcasting experience or talking experience and come into this and think that it's easy, because it's not. Now, obviously, a lot of these people that we're discussing have the funds and the money to have a team. So they don't have to do as much as lower scale or lower tier, at least if you talk about viewership and when you're talking about a following, lower podcasts have. Like for me, I'm a one-man band. I do everything from edit to find clips to obviously record to do audio. Like I do it all. And I just don't want the value of a podcast to decrease, because I think it has been decreasing when you see a bunch of people coming in. I just don't want people to think that, you know, I don't want it to decrease to a point where people think that this is easy, because it ain't at all. But to answer the person's question, I think that, you know, these athletes taking control of the narrative and taking control of their space is a beautiful thing. And I think it's very important. And I think that, you know, I think that there's always going to be space for athletes discussing themselves, reporters from news outlets, and other podcasters. Like I always look at Mina Kimes as an inspiration to me, because she hasn't played a lick of football, like, ever. And I've learned more about football listening to her, how she breaks down things, than I would possibly a former athlete. So in that instance, there are ways and there are definitely avenues where someone that has not done what they're discussing is important. It's just you have to take the craft extremely seriously, which she does, and which, you know, I do, which a lot of people do. Shouts out to everyone that does. And shouts out to every athlete that wants to take control of their narrative and take control of their platform. It definitely is a beautiful thing, man. I think it's pretty cool. I do. I really do. But there you have it. That's been today's episode of the Unpopular Podcast. I truly, truly, truly appreciate you guys. If you want a Unpopular Podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve, joggers, links in the description below. I have multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube. I'm trying to get as many subscribers as possible. It definitely means a lot. If you like the content and you're not subscribed, subscribe. If you got to this point and you're not subscribed, I don't know what to tell you, bro. Subscribe. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to subscribe. It means a lot. Also, if you listen to the DSPs, I understand that there's some people that only watch me on YouTube and there's some people that only listen to me on the DSPs, whether that's Apple Podcast, Spotify, SoundCloud. Please follow, please subscribe. It definitely means a lot. You guys are just as important as my YouTube listeners, and it means so much to me. Tell a friend to subscribe or follow. Also, follow socials, follow Instagram, follow TikTok. I post pretty much daily, whether that's stories, reels, polls, that I connect with you guys, I talk to you guys. Follow, you know, it definitely means a lot. That's where you get more exclusive content, and that's the quickest way to get to me if you want to have a debate or discuss something with me. So follow the socials. And until next time, much love.